Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition. Nothing stays the same.
Manton Reese, you have left us all alone in our, what do you call it, Stockholm Syndrome? Is that what we're experiencing, those of us who choose to remain on Twitter?
Yeah, it was hard to leave you guys. I still read some of your tweets, so.
Oh, you're sneaking back in.
Well, I have a product, so two products that, you know,
right,
work with Twitter. But yeah, I'm not posting anymore. And a couple episodes ago, I mentioned that I was thinking about doing this, and I said that I would leave Twitter, but I would still reply to tweets because I didn't want to be a jerk. People at reply me, and then they don't hear back, and they think I don't care. It turns out I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to reply. I'm completely not going to post, retweet, or reply, because the problem is I realize that if I reply to anybody, it looks like I'm active there, which I'm not. But it's also not clear that I've left. So I set up my last tweets. I sort of planned them and set them up to make sense and to make it obvious that I'm saying goodbye. That's where it's going to leave. If you go to my profile page from now until, you know, possibly forever, you'll see those last couple of tweets, and hopefully it'll be clear that I've signed off.
What do you say possibly forever? Do you anticipate Twitter changing and you get drawn back in, or is that?
No, that's not going to happen, I don't think.
Would you revise that statement to say probably forever instead of?
Probably would maybe be better.
Yeah.
People have asked me that. You say this now, but 6 months from now, you'll change your mind and come back. And, you know, one of the reasons I made a big deal about this is to make it obvious that I'm not going to change my mind.
Right.
And to sort of force myself not to change my mind, because even if Twitter changes their policies and there's new leadership or there's something that makes me feel better about the way they treat developers, from experience, we know that nothing stays the same there. I mean, 6 months later, they may reverse again, and it's just a very shaky platform to develop for. And I can't imagine that they would make a change that would make me want to come back, knowing that things may just reverse again.
Yeah, you've lost your taste for Twitter, and it's like when you really like a band and then they just make the worst album ever. And it's so embarrassing that you can't imagine calling yourself a fan again.
Something like
that.
Yeah,
it's exactly like that, Mino.
Luckily, there's a new band in town, right, that's touring, and that's
app.net. That's app.net.
It's been great to see that service do everything right at the time that I've become really disappointed with Twitter, and it makes the transition a lot easier. You know, a couple of days before I had been scheduled to quit Twitter, NetBot from TapBot shipped, and that was a huge spike. Lots of people using app.net again, and so it really kind of boosted my confidence a little bit that it would be possible to just switch to app.net and feel like there's still a community there. There's still a lot of people, you know, I have plenty of people that I'm following and that are following me back to make it work.
I have been using app.net pretty regularly. I got more into it when I started using this Wedge client on the Mac.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good. I wish the developer well, and I hope that it continues to grow. But I'm really jealous of the NetBot on... it's called NetBot or AppBot? I keep forgetting.
NetBot.
So I'm really jealous of that on iOS. And just, you know, the developers of that, TapBots, have been beta testing the Mac version of their TweetBot, and I'm just you know, screaming inside for the Mac version of NetBot now, because I think that would really make, you know, as much as their iOS app has brought people back onto app.net and refocused people's attention on it, I think that would, for a lot of us, we're desktop oriented most of the day, and that would really help.
Yep. I really like Wedge a lot too, and I think my one advice for the developer, he should have been charging for this 2 weeks ago. And if I were him, I would charge immediately.
Yeah.
Like, I would call it 1.0 and start charging, because it's really good, really slick UI. It's improving quickly. It's stable. I really have no complaints with it. And I think he's really leaving money on the table by not charging for this app now while people are interested And while he's honestly the best solution on the Mac right now.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I wanted to mention something else about your Twitter departure, which was, you know, you ended with this orchestrated series of tweets leading up to a link to the powerful collection of Steve Jobs related tweets from a year ago when he passed away.
Yeah.
And, you know, our last episode was a sort of memory of Steve Jobs, and you added in the editing of that, you added to the opening a really powerful quote from Steve Jobs, which I took to mean, hey, basically, you know, this, I added it all up in the, you know, the delivery of the episode coming on the same day as your departure from Twitter. The quote was, okay, it's here. I have it here. If today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I'm about to do today? And I sort of obviously took the bait and read into the drama of that being like, you are basically saying, if I can't look at Twitter and say, this is what I would want to be doing on the last day of my life, then I don't want to do it now or ever. Is that unfair, or is that sort of all tied up with it, with itself?
No, I think it's fair. I wasn't thinking specifically of that quote, but I was knowing that we would, I did know that we were going to post that episode that day. And that is why I picked that to be my last day on Twitter. But yeah, that quote, I think about that quote a lot, and it was really powerful the way he delivered it, and how it's right on. I mean, you it's a great way to judge things that you're doing and to think about whether they really matter in the long run. For Twitter, yeah, it's, you know, I've been unhappy for a while with the way they're running things, the direction they're going in, and there's just one thing after another. And at some point I said, you know, it's enough. You know, I'm going to move on. I still have products that use Twitter, and I'm going to support those customers. And actually, ironically, I've been working a lot the last few days on a tweet library release that I just submitted to the store last night. But I felt like it was a good time to sort of both make a statement and also just personally just kind of withdraw and focus on, in terms of my own active use of the platform, taking that away.
Right. Well, you know, that Steve Jobs quote is kind of funny too, because I believe him when he says he's, you know, it says in the quote that he's been doing that every, well, when he was alive, he had been doing that every morning for the last 33 years. And it reminds me of the famous advice to John Scully about selling sugar water for the rest of his life, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was evidence, I think, that was the way he saw the world way back then too, right? It's like, he was doing that looking in the mirror on behalf of John Scully and trying to pull him out of a situation where, you know, obviously Steve projecting onto Scully's feelings, but basically saying, you know, you should be saying no about this because it's just a, you know, an unfulfilling thing to do.
Yeah. You're right about that quote. I hadn't thought about that in a while, even when we were talking about that, but that's such a great line and probably the most memorable. You know, when he says, do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life, or come with me and change the world, or
yeah,
so, whatever it is. Yeah. The newer quote, when he's giving that, that address, has more context because at that point he was sick, but then he was better, I guess, when he gave that speech. But in terms of what he's actually saying, you're right. I mean, that's probably something he's been thinking about for decades, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of what drives him.
Yep. And it makes me wonder, like, the other part of the quote was like, if the answer is no, you're not doing what you would want to be doing on the last day of your life for too many days in a row, then you need to change something. And so that's, you know, it's a generous that he acknowledges people have to go through days and weeks and months, maybe, where you are waking up every morning and saying, no, this is not what I want to be doing. But it makes me wonder how many days at Apple did, you know, in the past year, or not, obviously not year, past 5 years, how many stretches were there of, you know, days when maybe it felt like that, maybe things weren't going the way that they should have, maybe 0 days. I don't know, but that's good food for thought. Well, Manton, I'm really sorry to see you leave Twitter, but on the other hand, I completely support your decision. I think that, You were smart to build yourself some sort of structural encouragements to stick with your plan. And it's the kind of thing where you're obviously giving something up, but you're conscious of what you're giving up. And hopefully the bulk of what you were getting from Twitter, you will be able to continue to get from app.net without the sour taste of all the Twitter policies that were starting to get you down.
Yeah. So far I have. So far I feel like it's a really good community. It feels fresh. Lots of the same people. It's great to get the support also from kind of the top of app.net. I mean, these people, they get it. And, you know, they replied to my email about something when we were talking about TweetMarker and syncing. They've got this new thing, this developer incentive program, every month putting some money aside to pay developers of third-party apps for the platform. So all these things they're doing right in terms of encouraging developers. And it's just so refreshing from what we're used to with Twitter. It's kind of the opposite. All right, so today we have a new sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by Brian Partridge, who makes PocketShare Pro. You spend a lot of time writing your apps, but marketing is hard. PocketShare Pro helps you to make the most of your efforts by giving you tools to learn more about your sales. It knows most of the apps already on your phone and makes it easy to share links to them via Twitter, send recommendations via email, and more. Log in with your LinkShare account to automatically embed a signature in your links, so you can see where you're having the most impact. You'll even earn affiliate commissions.
And you can check that out at brianpartridge.name. This is a really cool app, Manton, because it does something very simple, really. You know, all quote unquote, all it's doing is getting you a URL with your affiliate link in it. But one of the cool things about it is it automatically scans your phone for anything you have installed. So it's really good for sharing links to your own stuff. You know, one of those open secrets about being an iOS or Mac developer is if you use an affiliate link of your own to link to your own apps, then you sort of make back a little bit of that 30% cut that Apple takes, because you get your revenue, you know, the commission for selling your own app. But this also scans your whole phone. I don't know how he does this, but mm-hmm. you know, it takes a few seconds and pops up a list of everything on your phone and then it just has easy buttons for tweeting it, Facebooking it, emailing it, or copying the link verbatim. And I can imagine this is really good for if you're at a conference or something and you're showing somebody an app and you say, I'll send you the link to this app, and send it to them, and suddenly if they do buy it, you get a little cut. So, cool app. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Brian. Once again, the URL is brianpartridge.name.
Yeah, cool app. It's really well polished. I really like how it pulls the list of apps in and the icons. Has some nice little animations too. So, really well done. Does exactly what it says. And definitely check it out for either sharing apps to other people that you know about, or your own apps, putting those in and tweeting about a new release or whatnot.
Cool.
So thanks again to PocketShare Pro for sponsoring. It's $2.99 in the iOS App Store. Check it out at brianpartridge.name. All right, well, we have another listener question today. This is from Jeremy Bruce, and he wrote us an email about how hard it is sometimes for users when an app developer takes their app in a new direction and you kind of want to stay with the old version. So part of what he says, he's talking about Reader and iWriter and Instapaper as examples. He says, I've paid for these applications and I use them dozens of times a day and they become part of my workflow. Then just because a developer thinks it will improve the situation, they upgrade it, pleasing some, pissing off others, and yet there doesn't seem to be any recognition that I paid for it and I want it to be the way it was. So a developer says, I've got a great idea to redesign this app, change everything. And then a user says, I liked it the old way.
Yeah. Classic issue or classic problem with one of the design constraints of Apple's App Store, which is they decided early on, it seems, that every user should be compelled to upgrade to the latest version of whatever app is out there, right? Like, obviously, you don't have to, they give you the choice not to update, but you can't downgrade. If you ever update, if you ever indulge an update, or if you just buy an app, you know, at some point in history where it's at a particular version. You don't have the option to go back to a previous version.
Mm-hmm. And I think his examples show just how divided maybe people are on this a little bit. Cause like two of the things he mentioned, Reader and Instapaper, I use both these apps every day. I love the new versions of these apps. I know Reader was a little bit controversial with some of the behavior changes he made in the new version. But personally, for me, it was a lot better. Same thing with Instapaper. The new versions have been great. So how do you balance this? Like, if only 5% of your user base doesn't like the new version, you know, how do you justify caring about that or not?
Well, realistically, the problem is not new, because even on the Mac, where generally speaking, you can offer users if you're outside the App Store, I should say, if you generally speaking, you can offer users a direct download link to an older version and say, you know, I'm sorry, you don't like the new version, here's the old version. But realistically, you expect everybody to sort of stay up to date with the latest releases. And at some point, you know, you may fix a bug that the user really needs, and you're not going to go back and then fix that in a branch of whatever version, you know, before a feature tweak they didn't like.
Yeah.
So I would say that what's nice about outside App Store is that you get this sort of safety valve in the short term of being able to say, look, I'm sorry, you hate that, but at least for the foreseeable future, you can stick with version 1.0 because before I made the major 1.1 changes.
Mm-hmm.
But getting sort of to the core of the question, how do you balance it? You know, I think developers like you and I, Manton, we're not making these changes willy-nilly. We're making the changes because we think they are truly an improvement on balance. It's an improvement that is worth making.
Right.
So it sort of has to do with whether you actually mesh with the personality and the priorities of the developers whose software you're buying. If Marco Arment with Instapaper pisses off a bunch of customers by updating his app, maybe those customers were a poor fit.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. You know, that's a flip way to look at it. But you know, you're sort of subscribing to the design and development aesthetic of whoever's apps you're buying.
Yeah.
That said, sometimes there's changes you need to make that are, you know, more of a concession. Sandboxing comes to mind. You know, that's situation where on the Mac, a lot of us developers are looking at sandboxing, saying, okay, I see the pluses, I see the minuses. Maybe it's not always going to be so much, though, of when we migrate to sandboxing, it's not going to be a clear, as clear of a, you know, developer approves this as on balance a major improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a challenge. That's one of the reasons, actually, Manton, that I think for sandboxing, if it at all works with a developer's schedule, it might be a good idea to time sandboxing release with a major upgrade where you're actually adopting a new SKU on the App Store.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And certainly Apple, like you said before about the way the App Store works, they could solve a lot of this by allowing developers to link to different versions than is what the current version is. And this would solve not just this problem raising this question, but also that time where you release a new version of your app and you miss something and it crashes on startup for almost everybody. And what do you do? Well, they have to wait. You go to Apple and you say, please, can I have an expedited review? But how great would it be if you could just put a link in there and say, oh, sorry, click here to downgrade to the old version.
The problem is you can't actually put a link link to anything yourself that would actually work under the App Store authority, because you can't sign things on behalf of Apple. So that raises the question. Actually, it would be asking too much of Apple to host every single version of an app. I don't know. I mean, they're taking 30%.
I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, and I don't think that's a big deal for them. My app's only a few meg anyway.
Do you think they have a copy of every single version of every app that has been live on the App Store?
It wouldn't surprise me if it's easier for them to just keep them around.
Yeah.
But I don't know for sure. I mean, they keep multiple versions when you have a new version waiting for review already. So I don't,
yeah,
I don't see if how it would hurt them to. And maybe if it is a storage problem for those apps that are like, you know, 500 meg, maybe you just keep like the latest one and then a previous one, something like that.
Right. That would be a great feature if you could just have the latest and the previous. But at some point, I think if they offered that, then the policy would be begged to be expanded beyond just the previous version.
And there's another part to this question when he sent this email about, you know, what can developers do to make this easier? And like you said, sometimes you just, it's either a good fit for your audience, your customers, or not. And if it's not a good fit, those customers maybe should look at the competition. But he was also asking, you know, should developers do things like in one app, should you be able to sort of opt in to new features? So like maybe there's some way where either a preference or there's some toggle where you could get old behavior. And of course, at some point it becomes not worth it to maintain. You almost have like two code bases in your app, and you don't really want that because you're only testing the one that you like. You don't want major differences in a single app.
That's a good question, actually. A good point or a good aspect of this question is one of the classic ways to address this quote unquote secret preferences, right? It's like, mm-hmm. I know like apps like BB Edit have a few of these, because they've been around for 20 years and
probably more than a few. Yeah.
And you have a certain loyalty to customers who have been there, especially if they've been there for 20 years. Some of those BB Edit customers probably gave Rich Siegel money 20 years ago. And, oh, you know, and then repeatedly at every upgrade opportunity. And I'm sure there's a great gratitude and sense of loyalty to those customers. So those 20 year customers who get pissed off when a feature changes or a feature is removed, they may hold a little more sway than the, you know, the person who's just angry because they, you know, they bought it last week and then something was changed.
Right. Also, BB Edit's a good example in some ways, I think, in that it's one of those apps that you use every day if you use it every day, and it's part of your workflow. And if anything changes, like that may prevent you from doing your job as well. And there's a few apps, more than a few apps like this, but a few apps for everyone, I think, where those changes kind of are disruptive. And so maybe with an app like that, you have to be a little more careful about how you change it. Whereas some apps, especially iOS apps, a lot of them are for entertainment purposes or some more sort of everyday smaller things that you shouldn't overthink making changes expecting it to ruin someone's life, because some of this stuff is just not that important.
Yeah, you know, it's funny with BB Edit because I think one of the strongest recurring criticisms of BB Edit is its quote unquote old fashioned UI.
Right.
And, you know, everyone says, oh, TextMate is so much more beautiful and it's, you know, modern. And, but you're right. If BB Edit 11 comes out and it is like a dramatically redone UI with like lots of flashy gradients and big fonts and all this stuff, then it's going to piss off those 20 year old customers. Maybe it'll quiet some of the complaints of people who think it needs to look a certain way. But I think what BB Edit has been doing, and it's been working, is they've been doing, because it's not true, BB Edit doesn't look the way it did 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago, but they have been kind of applying the slowly boiling the frog method, I think. Yeah. Like, it's one of those things where I think BB Edit basically looks the same as ever, but then you look and you're like, oh, you know, actually they redid this menu, they redid this preferences, they added some gloss here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way to sort of approach this from a developer point of view, I think, is try to make your feature changes feel less gutting, you know, like try to, on the one hand, that's not as great for marketing, because it's great if you can come out for marketing and say completely redone interface, you know, but for that loyalty and customer sort of not jarring the customers, I think that's a way to go about it.
Yeah.
And finally, I would just say, from a developer point of view, often these customers are just whining. You know, I mean, often it's just, they just don't know. They have a trigger reaction to complain about it, and then they get used to it. So it's really hard as a developer to judge, because I do the same thing as a customer. Like, oh, I hate this. We were talking about this last week. I hate the quote unquote hate the new iPhone 5 screen, right? Because several of us were like this, and now everyone who has one is like, I love the new iPhone screen. They're getting used to it, and the same thing happens with features in an app. So, like when I make changes to Mars Edit, some of my long-time testers are like, just outright hate this, and I have to gauge it. No disrespect to them, because I do the same thing, but I have to gauge it. Is this hate based in something fundamental that's wrong? Mm-hmm. That's wrong with the change, or is it just, you know, somebody moved my cheese? You know, like it's one of those things where you have to figure out: are they just going to get used to it and think, oh, you know what? Because I've seen that happen too. The same people who quote unquote hate something, 2 weeks later, they're saying, you know what? I actually got used to that, and I agree it's an improvement. So,
yeah, great point. Thinking about BBit, I was thinking about just sort of slowly evolving an app, and also the difference between sort of paid upgrades and minor revisions. And I know Will Shipley used to say, like, don't put any new features in an app unless it's a paid upgrade.
Right.
And I always thought that was a little extreme, but I think he stuck with that for the most part for Delicious Library. It's like lots of bug fixes, maybe a couple minor tweaks, but the UI did not change. Major features weren't added unless it was a paid upgrade. And I don't know if you can really get away with that on iOS, especially for apps that need to be evolving. There's an expectation that upgrades should be free and that apps are quickly improving.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said for that in terms of simplifying this problem.
I remember hearing when I first heard that, and it's one of those things that has an appealing ring to it. But my internal conversation about that was, I need to be improving my app constantly, because not only to make my customers happy, not only to get more buzz, more marketing, more word of mouth, but the fact is, I'd rather add something to the app today that maybe increases sales by, you know, $100 a month, mm-hmm. and then have those improved sales for the next 2 years, than wait and, you know, only reap the benefits of all those new features 2 years from now when the 2.0 comes out.
Yep.
The challenge for me is not withholding, that's a poor choice of words, but sort of staging features for a major release so that they make sense together and look like and feel like cause for a major update.
Yeah.
Other features, they're just like, oh, this would be a great thing to add. You know, like if a new blog system comes out and half the world starts using it, then I should support that new blog system today, not on the next major update. I should support it as soon as I can, because suddenly my market is twice as big, you know?
Oh yeah. In the 5 or 6 years that I've been doing this little indie business, I've never charged for a paid upgrade, actually. And I think part of it is exactly what you're talking about, is if I could deliver something for customers that's valuable today, let's do it. And personally, when I implement a new feature and it works great and I love it, I can't wait to give it to people. I'm just like, I've got to release this like as soon as possible, because there's that feeling that the version that's out there, it's just not as good as what I have here. And I've got customers that could really benefit from this. The faster I get this out, the better off and happier people will be.
Yeah, I have that problem too. One of the things that helps is when I get far enough down the line on development of, you know, the future version of something, it's really difficult to backport some of those changes to the branch that's current. So the difficulty of that makes it easier for me to have that discipline to say, oh, well, even if I did want to bring this great feature back to the current shipping version, it would take a lot of refactoring, introduce risk, bugs, etc. So that helps it. The other thing I wanted to mention about paid upgrades is they make a really good opportunity to sort of wipe the slate clean and start anew with all the expectations for your app. Because, you know, I alluded to this with the idea that you should have a different SKU in the App Store for sandboxed version, because basically what you're doing is you're saying, okay, everybody who's ever bought the app up until now, you're good. You can stick with the app you have. It's It's gonna get far fewer updates, maybe only bug fix updates from now on. But the new Whiz Bang, 5.0 version is going to sort of be a new product that you can choose to upgrade to. It's sandboxed, let's say. It has stricter OS requirements. Like I usually try to say, change the OS requirements only at a paid upgrade. It seems sort of ironic. Like why only, impose this on people who are paying you? But it's sort of like an opt-in system. You don't surprise anybody with a new version requirement when they also have to be paying for something new and sort of making a committed decision to embrace all the new stuff that you're giving them along with any drawbacks it might have.
All right. Well, good talking to you again this week. And I will see you at Singleton later this week. Hope to see some other listeners there.
Sounds good. I look forward to seeing you. And we'll have a wrap-up review of Singleton next week, I'm sure.
Cool. Bye.